Welcome to the Athenaeum Review, where we talk about the ideas that shape our world. I'm Ben Lima, and our guest today is Hansung Dan, who's Associate Professor of English at the School of Foreign Studies at Nanjing University. He's published many research articles on modern and contemporary American novels, 9/11 literature, posthumanism, and digital humanities. And he's the author of the book, To Realize the Universal, Allegorical Narrative in Thornton Wilder's Plays and Novels, as well as the translator of several works by Thomas Pynchon, Julian Barnes, and Thornton Wilder. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to start by asking you a little bit about your views of American literature in general and how you first became interested in this field and then decided to do research. Is American literature very well known in China, or do students often read them in the university?
Well, I'd like to begin with a somewhat startling fact. That is, English major is the largest one.
Really?
In my country.
I didn't know that.
So as an American scholar, you might be curious why a Chinese, interested in American literature.
Yeah.
But actually, there are so many, professionals working on American literature, teaching American literature, and studying American literature. So it's not very rare.
Really?
Huh. It's quite commonplace for a English major student, especially when he or she has earned his or her, PhD.
Right.
End up teaching American literature.
Wow.
So that's a very commonplace choice for me.
Right.
But more personally speaking, I think American literature, compared with other national literatures, is very unique.
Huh.
Because of its history.
Mm-hmm.
Because of its scope.
Mm-hmm.
And because of its myth-making and myth-unmaking. That's what, every time when I start teaching American literature to my third-year students, I will ask this question. I will throw out this question. Why American literature? Since they have, taken the course British literature last semester. And I would say, why bother to study American literature? I will say, American literature is, it's very expensive and very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's safe to say, in my opinion, 20th century American literature is the most dynamic and productive and impressive one compared with, British literature or Canadian literature, because you have so many literary giants.
Yeah.
And like Hemingway, Faulkner, Fitzgerald. And so you ask me why I'm so fascinated by American literature. I think the reason sometimes is very self-evident because of these literary luminaries, because they are there.
Yeah.
Because there are so many, novels, poems, dramas, written by these American authors, and they're purely great.
Wow.
So I think it's worth my life to profess, to teach, to write about American literature.
Yeah, yeah. That's very interesting for me to hear from someone outside of America, since, I have this perspective. Of course, I learned some of this in school and so forth, but to hear the perspective of someone who's looking at it from the outside is very interesting. I wanted to ask about, in your experience teaching, are there certain authors that are very popular among the students, or others, for example, who they don't understand or they don't like?
That's a very interesting question. So, sometimes English major students like students in the United States today are kind of lazy. They are more accustomed to fast reading.
Right.
They are reluctant, or they don't know how to do slow reading.
Yeah.
That's why they might find some authors quite intimidating, like James Joyce.
Right, right.
But James, not James, sorry. James Joyce is an Irish writer. I want to say Henry James.
Okay, yeah.
Henry James, because of his very dense style.
Yeah.
But Sherwood Anderson could be a favorite.
Yeah.
You know, because his fiction, I'm talking about Winesburg, Ohio.
Yeah.
Because he's very good short story writer, always about this very baffling experience of modernity a small town's point of view.
Right.
And I think my students can find much resonance with these stories because China today is also exposed to this very dazzling transformation, social transformation. But for those top students, they prefer Henry James to Sherwood Anderson. Okay. Because they want to read challenging texts. And at one point, I have some very bright students who wrote to me that they just find, you know, have you heard of The Beast in the Jungle? That's a very difficult novella written by Henry James. They simply like it. Some students would spend like days or months reading and rereading a difficult text like this.
Mm-hmm.
And they enjoy this. And they can be very proud of being a Henry James reader.
Yeah.
You know, one student of mine told me that, you know, in her second year as a exchange student, she went to a British school.
Yeah.
Taking a course on literature.
Mm-hmm.
And in a class, the professor asked, how many of you have read The Beast in the Jungle by Henry James? And nobody raised a hand except my student. And you know what? She proudly, you know, wrote back to me saying, I owe so much to you, Professor Dan, because of my, I have, you know, taking your course, I'm assigned to read this text, and I think that's something you have every reason to be proud of, you know, being, you know, a good reader of Henry James.
Yeah. Wow, that's very, very interesting. Another question that I had in mind, from the American perspective, that I recall when I studied American literature in school, that starting with, for example, Emerson and Thoreau and the Transcendentalists, that this idea of individualism and personal freedom and sort of self-expression is supposedly very central in American literature. And I was curious, for example, in China, if this kind of theme has the same interest, or does it sort of make sense in the same way of the kind of the individual identity is so important?
I think it is very natural for my students to find Emerson or Thoreau's text quite alien.
Okay.
Because they, you know, grow up in a totally different culture.
Yeah.
That emphasize collectivism,
right,
rather than individualism.
Right.
But I have to say, this is the age of globalization.
Yeah.
The cultural gap between the United States and China is closing.
Yeah.
And so democracy or American Revolution, individualism, American dream.
Yeah.
All of this have been very pervasive in their, you know, visual or literary experience in their daily life.
Yeah.
I mean, my students, other than, studying American literature will just, you know, watch TV series.
Yeah.
By American TV series and Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
So the younger generation, I would say, in China today is more and more exposed to this global culture.
Yeah.
And compared with their parents.
Right.
They have more and more rapport.
Yeah.
With American literature, with American culture, and those values.
Yeah.
Behind these texts.
Yeah.
But that's not to say they can think and read in in the same way as American students.
Right.
American student does in classroom.
Yeah.
But that's also very interesting, because these different perspectives will trigger some very interesting insights.
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah, because the way my students interpret, Benjamin Franklin's autobiography can sometimes be quite quite interesting, because they might ask some questions.
Right.
You American student won't ask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so it's my job. It's my job to tell them what happened to your to your interpretation, what happened to your misconception, and then let's see how your pre-understanding gets involved in this reading process.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a very interesting part of my job.
Yeah, I can imagine. This reminds me of a minute ago you mentioned Sherwood Anderson, and you're talking about modernity, and I was thinking that this experience or the theme of perhaps someone being born as a child in a small town in a traditional context, surrounded by family, and then moving to a big city like Chicago or Nanjing, yeah, or something, and being surrounded by modernity, that's probably quite similar whether it's in America or China or anywhere.
Right. Right. And this, I think for Sherwood Anderson, this type of the grotesque, uh-huh, is actually universal.
Hmm.
And given all this talks on postmodernism, you know, the postmodern, yeah, I think the modern is not outdated.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a kind of continuity, and it is universal for a Chinese student who, you know, grows up in a small town, say in Zhejiang province,
right,
and then he goes to the university in Shanghai,
right,
and the grotesqueness is the same.
Yeah,
that's why I love reading and teaching American literature, because it is relevant.
Yeah,
it is always relevant in spite of this, very different American characteristic. But you can find commonality.
Yeah,
and that's what I always direct my students to do. Don't just read as a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
We read as a human being.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask about your book on allegorical narrative in Thornton Wilder's plays and novels. And so first, how did you decide to write a book about Thornton Wilder?
Well, that's actually a happy coincidence, because when I was a PhD student in 2006, my advisor is actually an expert on Eugene O'Neill.
Okay.
And at that time, I was very interested in Thomas Pynchon.
Okay, yeah,
the
yeah,
postmodern one. But he was not a big fan of postmodernism.
Okay.
He's a little bit, you know, old-fashioned.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to pick up a topic which is interesting not only to me, but also to him.
Right, right.
So I During the summer holiday, I did my survey, coming up with several plans. Plan A, Plan B, Plan C.
Mm-hmm.
Plan A is about Thomas Pynchon.
Mm-hmm.
Plan B is Thornton Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Plan B is very promising to me. Okay. I said, okay, I will do that. I think a more specific reason is Thornton Wilder is a very intriguing author in that he is probably the only American writer who can win Pulitzer Prize for both fiction and drama.
Right.
That means you are able to straddle two genres.
Right.
That's very challenging.
Yeah.
Eugene O'Neill at one point tried to write fiction, but it's a fiasco.
Yeah.
And we have some American novelists who want to dabble with drama, but you know. So this my dissertation started with a cross-generic study.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to ask how can Thornton Wilder, you know, be good at both genres?
Mm-hmm.
And that's my point of departure.
Mm-hmm.
And I boil down to one keyword: allegoricalness.
Okay.
Allegoricalness.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes his you know, his novel is very dramatic and his drama novelistic, because for him, genre is something quite coercive. What really matters is to address the group mind. Allegory, rather than novel or drama, is what, you know, the primary concern for him.
Okay.
Because allegory can be employed to render something profound, universal, and extremely urgent for people of his time.
Yeah. That's interesting. So in you had explained how in the history of Western literature,
mm-hmm.
In earlier periods, such as, for example, in Dante's Divine Comedy, allegory was very valued.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the Romantic period with, say, Coleridge, it was criticized. And then more recently in the postmodern period with Thomas Pynchon or Paul de Man, it's once again valued. But at the time that Wilder was writing, was allegory an accepted kind of thing at this time, or not so much?
Right. He knew very well that his choice of allegory, or writing novel and fiction with allegoricalness, was a very unpopular one. Mm-hmm. Was a very unpopular choice.
Yeah.
He would be despised by people like Mike Goat.
Right.
You know, Mike Goat is a very fervent left-wing critic in 1930s.
Yeah.
Just take that context into consideration.
Right.
In 1930s, when realism was deemed so crucial, so patriotic, and so relevant, politically correct for the artists, Thornton Wilder decided to write something very distant. In Rome, in Peru.
Right.
So that's not an unwise choice.
Yeah.
But that's him.
Mm-hmm.
He deliberately tried to defy, you know, people's expectation of literature,
right.
The norm or the decorum of literature. But it is a total misunderstanding if you say Thornton Wilder intended to revive the old-fashioned allegory in 17th or 18th century.
Right.
Because I think he tried to write a kind of modern allegory. That's my point.
Okay.
And this modern allegory is not as, you know, it's not as rigid as what you can read in you know, the Pilgrim's Progress or
right.
or some very, you know, neoclassical works like them. He's trying to disrupt this very rigid correspondence between the signifier and the signified. Mm-hmm. And he had been many times been accused of didactic.
Right.
And didactic seems to be very unavoidable if you choose to write allegory.
Right.
But he just, you know, ignored criticism like this. Mm-hmm. And he thought didacticism itself was not a crime.
Right.
I can be didactic, but at the same time, I can write in a beautiful, coherent and convincing way.
Right.
Without being so preachy.
Right.
My dissertation goes to analyze and dissect all of his major plays and novels to find this the modern feature of his allegorical writing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would you say that the modern feature is that the kind of universal that he's talking about is more existentialist kind of universal as compared to mm-hmm. the Pilgrim's Progress or the Divine Comedy or something like that? Or let me ask, what would you say is the modern nature of his allegory as opposed to the neoclassical? Or...
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a very important question. For Thornton Wilder, allegory is to, is to stimulate a very serious and profound thinking of not just this world,
yeah.
but that world.
Yeah.
And Thornton Wilder's allegory is modern in that he was not doctrinal at all.
Right.
He was born in a very Calvinist family.
Right.
His brother was a Harvard theologian.
Right.
But he was not a guy like that.
Right.
He was unlike his brother in many, many ways.
Yeah.
And he was enormously interested in religion.
Yeah.
But he was not a, you know, typically Christian priest.
Right.
So why is his allegory modern? I think on the one hand, he tries to allegorize our existence so as to, to give a narrative which is a little bit above this, our secular existence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, unlike many classical allegorists, he refused to give you a quite, definite answer.
Right.
It's always open question.
Yeah.
It's not to teach you a lesson.
Yeah.
It's just to, wake you up.
Right.
And that is why I'm so fascinated by his allegorical writing.
Yeah.
Because there's, what you can take away is not something definitive. It is always, something you might think over again and again in the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Just like our experience of our town.
Right.
Our
right.
town, this year is the 80th anniversary of his of this play's premiere, and people's response to Our Town, a very allegorical play,
yeah,
is very mixed.
Oh, okay.
Somebody would say this is a lovely family play about love, about human relationship. We should stick together and something like this. But there are other readers and critics who find Our Town profoundly disturbing.
Yeah.
They think there is something, existentialist
yeah.
or or even anti-religion, or so people cannot even agree what this Our Town is about.
Yeah.
I think that's why his allegory so modern, because it invites quite different interpretations.
I thought it was very interesting. So this play, Our Town, set in Grover's Corners, New Hampshire, this very mm-hmm. small town, but actually his biography, his life, was so cosmopolitan. He spent some years in China as a child. He studied archaeology in Rome.
Yeah.
He was friends with Gertrude Stein. He taught at the University of Chicago. I wanted to ask, how do you think his life experience, is his life experience a kind of contrast with his choice to write this play in this very traditional small town, or how did he decide to write about a small town in this way?
Well, I think it has something to do with dramatic irony.
Yeah.
Because, as a theater goer,
yeah.
You always expect something surprising.
Yeah.
Right? And here it is his trick in 1938.
Yeah.
He staged Our Town, which is on the surface about a very, tranquil, pastoral small town
right.
in New England,
yeah.
in New Hampshire. But actually, it turned out something very odd.
Yeah.
Because on stage, you have two families, going on, doing everyday life. But at the same time, there's a stage manager
yeah.
roaming on the stage.
Yeah.
Interrupting your the story, the narrative
yeah.
on stage, reminding us of a larger framework of reference.
Yeah.
So you're talking about, your chicken, your Paris visits, your old furniture, your marriage, your love. But don't forget that, look up here. There's a bigger cosmological reference there.
Yeah.
Just look at moon.
Yeah.
Sun or stars. All of this, for Wilder, this is to build up a very dramatic contrast between this mundane
yeah.
and this perennial things.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a shock we are supposed to experience
yeah.
when watching a play like Our Town
yeah.
to unfold the sublime from the very, very secular and mundane existence.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting. I just thought it's kind of a contrast to the question I asked a few minutes ago, where there's a tradition of, people leaving small towns to encounter modernity in the
right.
big city. But maybe this play shows us that wherever, the existential questions are alive, even if you stay in your small town, you don't have to go to the big city to be
right.
confronted with this question of meaning.
And, right, right, yeah. right. So this is a message he
yeah.
tries to render.
Yeah.
Because we are so obsessed with modernity and the modernization or this, and we have this cultural wars, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Emphasizing differences.
Yeah.
Identities.
Yeah.
21st century literature is just, preoccupied with the theme of identity politics.
Yeah.
But Wilder, as a counter voice, is standing on the, a very marginal place, telling you that, well, you carry about this very political and social identities, but at the same time, please don't forget that you are the same. in that you are mortal.
Yes, yes.
You are going to die.
Yeah.
Be you in Grover's Corners or Beijing or Taipei, your existence is transient.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we have gained that kind of perspective, we might have a different opinion about, you know, the politics, about many current issues.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will talk more with Hansung Dan about American literature, Thornton Wilder, and terrorism in contemporary literature. This is the Athenaeum Review podcast.